Hello and welcome back. We haven't talked about new movies in a while, so this is Nathaniel, and I'm here with Nick and Joe.
Hi.
I like to be called American Honey now, please.
We're recording this on the day that the Cannes winners will be announced, but unfortunately, we don't know those yet. But if American Honey wins, then Nick's joke is going to be even better.
It's true.
I think it's pretty great already.
Call me Tony Erdman.
Nathaniel, you can be L.
I already am.
Or the Neon Demon. You pick.
So, what have you guys been seeing lately? I just got back from The Lobster last night.
Ooh.
I saw The Lobster on Friday.
I saw The Lobster many months ago, but I still love it.
Right, and it's one of those things that's taken forever to come out, so I don't feel bad discussing it, like, weeks after it opened.
No, it's been such a slow burner, but it's that first half of that movie is some of the funniest stuff in quite a long time. Every time Olivia Colman is on screen sort of explaining some regulation of
yeah,
she's a treasure. She's a goddamn treasure.
She is. And there's the moment I knew I loved the movie was very early, when she came into his room to explain things to him.
Yes.
And she was like, that would be absurd. Like, this total deadpan about, like, whether if you wanted to be a hippopotamus or something.
How a hippopotamus couldn't be with a kangaroo or something.
Right. Yeah. A camel. A camel, yeah. And a hippopotamus couldn't be together. That would be absurd. And the whole thing is absurd, which made it so funny. And I thought, yeah, the actors were really good. I love Colin Farrell, you guys. I love him more all the time.
Should we briefly explain what the movie is in case somebody's listening to this and is like, what the fuck, a camel?
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. So, it's a dystopian comedy about a society where, unless you're paired up in a couple, you end up being transformed into an animal. But the kind gesture is you get to choose which animal.
Well, you're all barracked up in this hotel where you have 45 days to find a partner. They take you out for recreation where your job is to shoot to death the other single people who have broken out of the hotel and are living as refugees in the woods. Who may or may not have formed a rebel army.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
Again, as a single person, this hit.
The tyranny of coupledom, right?
Yes, my God, yes.
It was really, really singular, this movie. Like, even if you don't love it, you should see it. It's kind of unmissable. There was a guy a few rows ahead of us last night who was clearly hating the movie. And it's one of those movies where it's so strange that it's okay if you have, like, an audience that's not with it.
It might even be better if it's mixed.
Yeah, because it feels like part of the movie. Like, it's just everything's wrong. And this guy was... He was so upset with the movie that he started punching his chair.
No.
Okay, he might have had a different problem.
No, because at first he was just like, oh! Like, anytime something, like, crazy would happen, he would go, oh! And, like, throw his head back.
But he sounds like a treasure.
But he stayed for the entire movie. We were like, if you hated it that much, because this started about halfway through, the rolling his head and, like, shouting his displeasure about the movie.
That's so funny.
But it was,
that was like me at A Simple Plan.
Did this win anything at Cannes last year?
It got the jury prize.
For audaciousness.
Okay. For audaciousness.
Just for lobsterness, you know? I love it too, and I've been reading a lot of reviews that come out on the sites that I follow pretty closely, like Reverse Shot, just loathe it and feel like it's mean and,
oh, really?
Yeah. Like cruel and misanthropic and has quote unquote no reason to exist. So I really had no idea how I was going to react when I went in, because people that I admire have been all over the map with it, but I loved it too. And I just had to respond to a paper about Dogtooth this week, so I had just rewatched that and Alps in the last couple days. And yeah, I think Lobster's really good.
I feel like his movies in general, you could, I guess I can see where you can go, you know, the route that they're misanthropic, although I find all of them to be darkly funny in a way that it's not like it celebrates the, you know, human pageant or whatever, but it like it it certainly is in, you know, is respectful of the humanity of its characters and sort of, you know, it's in there with them. I don't feel like it's quite so arch as to be, you know, holding them at, you know, a distance to that degree.
And I also think it's like, I mean, this is the same argument you get into with the filmmakers like Von Trier. You know, if the topic is misogyny, does that make it misogynistic? And in this case, like, it's a dystopic vision. So saying that it's mean is true, but it's not. That's not really a quality judgment. Yeah. I don't think, because it is mean.
Oh yeah, his characters are always mean to some degree, or like, yeah, or like self-interested to the point of extreme callousness.
Mm-hmm. But I loved all, I will say this about it, like, even though the cruelty of it was hard for me at spots, especially because there's a lot of animals in the movie.
Oh, yeah. But,
the one thing that totally elevated it for me was how it kept shifting.
Uh-huh.
Like, when we were in the hotel where you have 45 days to select a partner, I thought, this is really funny, but I was thinking to myself, I'm not sure this can be sustained for a feature film. Because I had no idea, like, I try not to watch, like, trailers or read reviews if I haven't seen something. So I had no idea that there was going to be all these other elements to the movie. And it kept, just as I felt like, okay, this is as many jokes as, and observations and satires you can get from this scene, then the movie would completely shift focus.
Mm-hmm.
So at first I thought, oh, this is a satire of the tyranny of coupledom, and then it became much more about a much more nuanced satire about just relationships in general.
Yeah, the way people are matched to each other, the way people, the way you self-assess how you match to other people, and the way that it actually turns out.
And the lies that you're totally willing to believe on purpose, you know, that you're aware that you're believing.
Yeah,
I will say, once it moves into the forest, it does lag for me a little bit, but the rest of it, I feel like, is so strong that it compensates.
Well, even the parts that aren't specifically any one thing are funny. Like, there's a scene where Colin Farrell and Rachel Weisz are making out in this French couple's apartment, and it's not specifically funny, but I just found it hilarious.
And Léa Seydoux is just like, get it together!
So there's all these weird beats where you're not sure what the tone is. Like, you don't know whether you should be, like, worried, or whether you should laugh, or... And I liked the sort of choose your own adventure about how you felt about so many different moments within other moments.
I had gathered that there were first half people and second half people, so I knew that we were going to make some big pivot at some point, but I was so absorbed in the first hour I kind of forgot that until we were clearly in a kind of different movie. But I really loved both halves, and I agreed with what you guys were saying about the movie's shifting way of thinking about relationships. But I also really liked that there's something that I feel like this movie knows it might have an easier time rallying its audience to be, like, mocking bureaucracy and institutions and ridiculous rules about how people will be paired. But then to kind of flip that and show all the problems in people who imagine themselves as rebels or outsiders or revolutionaries or whatever. I did like that it sort of takes the piss out of both of those sides, which may be something that people who really don't like it don't like about it, that it kind of undermines every possible position. And then at the end of the movie, you're like kind of outside of both of those collectives, and it just is a whole another story about your own principles, you know? And, like, what are you willing to do for yourself or for somebody you profess to care about, kind of one-on-one? And so I also like that, that it kept kind of changing its question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think the end is really interesting. Well, no spoilers, but we've actually discussed this before. I remember when Short Bus came out, Nick, one of your issues with it was that the normativity that it's saying that it's against, it's sort of pairing everybody off at the end again, the tyranny of coupledom, you know, these like tight-knit pairs of people, rather than any variations, like if you're not willing to subscribe to the norm, you know.
Right.
And I thought this one was really interesting in that, because even though it's sort of making fun of, like, that you have to, you can't be alone, it's sort of making fun of the everybody's desire to be partnered, but then recognizes that that desire is totally intrinsic.
Yep.
So I just, I thought it was super interesting.
Totally agree.
What else have you guys seen recently?
High Rise? I just saw that on Thursday. You guys have seen it, right?
High Rise.
I can
never predict how people will feel about it.
I had mixed feelings about it, but I liked it, but I actually, unlike Lobster, because I could easily compare them, sort of dystopic satires, I didn't think it had enough material to sustain how long it was.
Uh-huh.
I would agree with that, even though I really liked it, but I would agree with
I liked pieces of it a lot, like especially like the first good chunk of it. I think it kind of went off the rails as it went along, but I think it's totally worth seeing.
Yeah, I think I reacted the same way, more or less. Like, I was kind of impressed with it. I did feel like it was kind of straining to be a huge statement pretty early and often. Mm-hmm. And so in a way, I don't know that I liked the movie better, but I sort of liked it just as much when it was getting totally disordered. In a way, I actually liked just watching these scenes of breakdown or debauchery and just letting them play out for a while and being a little bit relieved from the, like, I don't know if you've thought about power structures, but we certainly have here on the set of High Rise. Like, I don't know why Jeremy Irons and Forrest Whitaker both graduated from the same school of, like, I've been brilliant a couple times, but usually I'm bad. Like, it seems like he's usually bad, and I couldn't wait to get away from him almost every time he was in this. And just that whole upstairs, I felt like, yep, this is the upstairs that one person in every movie like this has. I get it.
Yeah.
Enjoy your garden. Like,
I thought there was probably too much of the movie put on Luke Evans's shoulders in a way that I don't think he could quite handle.
Well, but, I mean, the character, too. I'm not sure that character can handle as much as is put on the character.
It's one of those movies where even the things that I don't like about it can be played as strengths because it's so ragged and it's so, like, the breakdown of itself feels right. The breakdown of the sort of structure where all of a sudden it's, you start to be somewhat at odds about where you are and where, you know, where you are in the building. I feel like the fact that the geography of the building always seems muddled initially seemed like a weakness to me, but then less so as the movie went along and as everything just started to break down, and the messiness of it felt right.
Yeah, I agree with that. I never stopped really admiring it, even though I'm not sure I ever, even when there were things I liked about it, I was never totally in its camp. And I always felt a little bit distanced from it, but the movie was doing a lot of things to be a little distanced from me, too. So,
yeah. Have we all watched enough of Ben Wheatley's other movies to sort of put it in any kind of context?
I have. That's the only one I've seen of his.
Oh, really? Oh, that's interesting.
It's I definitely saw, Jesus, what was it called? Kill List?
Kill List, yep.
Which was another one that it didn't occur to me until after High Rise, but I think I might have had the same reaction to. Like, there's a kind of high concept aspect to Kill List, or at least a sort of structured design to it.
Yes.
And I was both impressed with the design and a little relieved when we got away from it and just squatted in weirdness and let his camera kind of explore the weirdness.
Yeah.
So I sometimes feel like his big concepts don't totally pay off.
I really liked, like, the highlights of Kill List are really, really good. And I don't know if I liked A Field in England, but it's singular in a way that I appreciate. And it's, like, really going for something.
So, Sing Street?
Oh my gosh, I love that movie.
I think we all do.
My God.
It's so, like, how could, I guess how could you not, but, like...
It's adorable.
It's adorable. It's so likable, and it's so, it's likable in a way that I wasn't really expecting either, where, don't know if I've seen a movie that's sort of romanticized that particular era, not that era, but, like, that genre of music and culture.
Yeah.
Which felt very cool. Like, it didn't really go for the easy... Like, I mean, romanticizing Duran Duran is not exactly an easy thing, because they don't really occupy that space in the culture.
Mm. Maybe they do if you're John Carney and you're a former bassist in a rock band.
You know? Oh, yeah.
That might facilitate it, yeah. Yeah, I just thought it was so sweet. It had a little bit... I liked it the whole time, but I think... And so the change wasn't as drastic as with Begin Again, where I felt like I kind of had to get over the first sequence, and right. Then everything was great. I do feel like I went from liking this movie to loving it, and it was pretty much the scene where the band plays for the first time.
Yep.
In the mom's house.
Yep. Where you realize that the song is good?
Yes, where you realize that the song is good, and that and also realize that they're just going to keep changing what they're doing.
Yes. Yes.
And feeling around for who they are that day, or
100%, I'm exactly with you with that. Yep.
The search for identity is, I think, the most successful part of it.
Yeah.
Just both on a visual level and a music level, and just that the idea of, like, a coming of age movie where it doesn't feel, this is going to be a weird thing to say about it, it doesn't feel predetermined, even though this is the type of movie that you know where it's going.
Completely.
But like, the characters' arcs don't feel predetermined because these people feel like real people, with the exception of the brother.
Yeah.
But the kids are just, they're great. Like, even like the band members who barely speak are great, I think.
Yes. Totally. Totally. And I was reading a bunch of interviews with him yesterday, because this was my movie group movie for this month, so I'm going to go talk to the ladies about it tomorrow, and then see how they fare with The Lobster next month, who can say. Oh. But he was saying how when casting all those kids, he didn't really have them audition in any particular way, he just waited to see who was funny, and if they had any musical ability whatsoever, even though I think we're only hearing them sing, but not actually hearing them play their instruments. He's like, yep, I figured if they could actually make a room of adults laugh in a couple of minutes, we were going to be fine. And you can kind of feel that. Like, those are all kind of funny kids. And he was saying, too, that that Ferdia Walsh-Pilo, which I may or may not be saying correctly, is way more like the way that character is at the end of the movie than the beginning. And they really hesitated to cast him because they weren't sure he was going to be able to sell the kind of tentative qualities of that character for the first hour.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like a huge achievement on his part, to seem timid or like an outsider, or in any way a misfit. And if that's true, I'm really impressed, because he definitely seemed like all of those things.
Yeah.
Although the sort of confident quality that he ends with, it also makes sense if that's more who he really is, that arc feels so great. It's so satisfying, and not in like a smarmy way. Like, there's so many movie characters who are like cocksure and confident.
Yeah.
And usually it's not that satisfying, at least to me. Yeah. But watching him become that way was super satisfying for some reason.
I think because I didn't experience there being a moment or even two key moments where that happened. Like, it did really feel like from scene to scene.
Yes.
That was slowly growing and even harder to notice because so many other things from scene to scene just were just varied so much. Like, the kind of music they were making and which relationships were important and which ones were romantic versus platonic, like, all of it. Mm-hmm. So I just love that I feel like with all three of his movies that we know, because I didn't realize how many more he'd made before Once, but how they all achieve that thing of you feel so different by the end than the beginning, but the wires have not really shown in terms of how that's happened. I am a little bruised this morning because of reading so many interviews with him yesterday where he's been quite open that it wasn't just that working with a bigger budget and bigger stars on Begin Again felt kind of alienating and he wanted to go back home and make something smaller, but that specifically working with Keira Knightley was such a drag.
Really?
That as he said in repeated interviews, and he makes clear that she's who he's talking about, he even names her, that to be surrounded by tried and true real actors, theater-trained actors in a movie, and then have your lead be basically a model who just can't do what you want her to do in terms of acting
is really
difficult. It was like, whoa!
She's so good in that movie, though.
She's the best in the movie! Yeah, totally! It's like, you were happier with Mark Ruffalo in that movie? Like, okay! but, yeah, he's just publicly down on... And I know she was a last-minute replacement for Scarlett Johansson, and I couldn't work out whether he was just disappointed that her musicianship maybe wasn't in the same place or something, but he then clearly says it was the acting. Like, she's a model and not an actress, and that's okay, but it changed the movie too much. Like, okay.
Wow. I've always said artists are not the best judge of their own work.
Yeah.
Because she's great in that movie.
I think so too.
I think we need to be well past the point where we're, you know, even begrudging about giving Keira Knightley her props, because
the first two interviews I read, he wasn't naming either the movie or the person, and I couldn't even figure out who he could be talking about.
Right.
Because of what you're saying. But he was.
It's never really gone away, people sniping at her, but she's so talented.
Yeah.
Speaking of actresses who I think probably need to get their due more than they are, Dakota Johnson in a bigger splash.
I'm sort of agnostic on her still.
Are you? I really liked her in this movie.
Like, I get why people think she's good in 50 Shades.
A big thing for me was when she hosted Saturday Night Live, and I knew that she was a good comedic actress because she was on that that sitcom on Fox that I liked that got canceled so quickly. But I think she comes to the work that she does with a little bit of a point of view, which I really like.
I thought she was good in How to Be Single this year.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
Maybe it's the Melanie connection.
I was about to say.
Mostly I'm just nervous about another one.
Reverse nepotism.
Were you anti-Melanie?
Oh. Like, you don't even know, before the blog existed, like, my early days of enemies. Hillary Swank was not the first, is what I'm saying.
Are you anti-working girl?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Particularly to the extent of who it blocked from various recognitions.
Exactly.
Wait, who did she beat out?
Well, Susan Sarandon had the Oscar nomination until that showed up. For Bull Durham.
Okay, alright. See, this was before I was following Oscars, so this is all very interesting to me. Okay.
Yeah, and so I just never forgave her for that, I have to say.
She's a real Dementor in the Nathaniel universe. Like, if they ever do like a Marvel-style series of movies about Nathaniel's world, she will be a...
And Jessica Tandy. Nice.
I struggled with this whole movie.
And it was
Bigger Splash. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
I mean, on the question of her, I just, my feelings about her were kind of, I guess, similar to about the overall film. Like, I just, I felt like the movie was working really hard. at things that shouldn't be that hard. And
in like a way what? That, like, what do you mean? I need specifics.
Conjuring sort of atmospheres of menace or unease among characters shouldn't necessarily mean having to cut to all four of them repeatedly in a row, exchanging glances with each other, and like getting right in the middle of that table and being like, ooh, he didn't like what he just said. Ooh, she didn't like it either, but she's kind of okay with it. Ooh, she's a nubile young thing who's just looking at... Like, it just was really specifying a lot of stuff that I kind of wanted to just back up and watch the interaction a little bit, but... So I just found it kind of fussy, and in conjuring discomfort and conjuring attraction in making characters, I mean, even though what I'm going to sounds ridiculous for this film, but say things out loud that already feel kind of clear. But I felt this way about I Am Love too. Like, I feel like that director is really
I Am Love. I have to say, like,
you did.
Hearing you describe that feels like my feelings about I Am Love.
Okay.
Oh, I don't know what to do with you two.
Impressed with his concepts, but I'm not that impressed with his concepts. And I usually like the movies better when I have forgotten what they are. But then they kind of crash back in.
You guys are hurting me.
I'm sorry. I knew this would be tricky.
Because I Am Love is like one of my favorite things ever.
I know.
I just love it so much. This movie is not on that level.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
But it's definitely worth seeing. Like, it has, I see what you're saying, but I actually, your least favorite part of it is maybe my favorite part of it.
Okay.
I think the editing is the strongest part of the movie. I think there's something so, like, tactile and, like, sort of alive and in the room about the editing, and maybe that for you translates to it's forcing me to look at every single character too often, but the editing just so impressed me. I thought it was like the sexiest part of the movie.
And yeah, I like
your countdown of the sexy things about the movie that culminated in the editing. Like, in theory, I thought that sounded great, but it just wasn't how I felt it while I was there.
I liked how the tone of the movie managed to keep it. It was almost like a sexual thriller comedy, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. In that, you know, something bad's going to happen, and yet it keeps it on this such a light tone that it never feels oppressive or like you're kind of boxed in, even though you see very early on where this is all headed, even if you don't know like specifically like the general direction of it. Is fairly clear, and
you even know where in the set it's all headed.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And yet I feel like because the tone of it feels light in so many parts, it doesn't feel like I'm just sort of like slogging through mud, getting to the point where I'm supposed to get to. And it does things like it plays with like Tilda Swinton's characters. The fact that she's not supposed to talk because it's going to hurt her voice. And I think they play with that not necessarily unexpectedly, but in ways that really work, where you're just sort of like, you know at some point she's going to break these rules that have been set for her. And yet it's like, I don't know, I felt it so much when she was just like, every time she started to sort of like squeak something out. And then when she starts singing karaoke with him,
yeah,
that bar the one night, and you're just sort of just like, no, don't, and yet like don't want her to not do it because it's Tilda Swinton and Ralph Fiennes doing karaoke together, and it's so like sexy and fun and wonderful, and at the same time you're just like, oh, this is gonna be so bad for her.
I liked the pull, so
my voice right now,
I liked the pull of relationships that you've moved on from but are still in your life. Like, her relationship with Ralph Fiennes in the movie was so fascinating to me because I totally understood why they broke up, but also why she still loved to have him around even though other people didn't.
Did it remind you of that Crash guy?
Huh?
the guy that you had leg sex with after a crash.
No.
You can edit that out.
But, sorry. Now my voice is going.
Oh, man. It's all sympathy pains.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's just my love of those actors, like three of my very favorite actors, plus Dakota.
Plus Spawn of Melanie.
It's like when Paul Dano's in a movie. Golden Globe nominee, Academy Award nominee, Paul Dano.
Oh,
brutal. So brutal. No, but he is a Golden Globe nominee, isn't he? Oh, no, he was. It doesn't matter.
Well, but you know what I'm saying, those trailers.
I totally know what you're saying, yeah. I always, yeah, but it doesn't matter. Yeah, I mean, I'm not all the way there with Matthias Schoenaerts yet, but pretty close. But the idea that I wouldn't just sit there and soak up a Tilda Swinton, Ralph Fiennes, Enchanted April, Mr. Ripley movie.
Yeah, that's basically made for you, right?
Yeah, but I didn't actually, I was surprised by some things I just couldn't. I didn't actually buy her as this Bowie-esque Chrissy Hynde, whoever she was. I didn't actually believe any of that. She didn't seem rock to me. There wasn't like a version of that. That version of celebrity didn't seem to cling all that well to her. So I felt a little blocked around her character the whole time. And the not talking, my favorite thing about the not talking was how quickly she was disobeying it in private.
Yeah.
So there were things that she and Paul, was that his name? Could say to each other. Cause I assumed that this would be the kind of thing that would, you know, we'd wait for the big moment where she finally speaks. So I thought it was cool that the concept sort of undermines itself, but then a lot of the other things that, and I did like that karaoke scene and the way she played that and how that was scripted for her, but a lot of the other things did feel like the beats I'd anticipated from that device from the beginning, just in terms of her talking more and too much and about that, and then the scream at the end, and it wasn't,
spoiler,
I'm sorry
alert.
To an asshole, but it wasn't as bad as the, like, I can't even remember my own name from I Am Love, which I was like giant eye rolling. But yeah, nobody forgets that, whatever, fine. But yeah, I wasn't super into her. I was more impressed with Ralph Fiennes, but I think I maybe wanted the movie to do something different with that kind of subterranean attachment to somebody you've technically moved on from than try to heatedly reunite them. That felt a little flat to me.
We're all trying to save our voice, Nick. That was
That was perfect.
I really am suddenly losing my voice.
That's crazy that it happened just all at once like that. It's Melanie. Melanie's heard you speaking ill of
her. She's found me out again.
So, yeah, I don't know whether it was, I was, you know, easily impressed by, because, like, Dakota Johnson's character is certainly, there's a lot of framing with her, and there's a lot of that character that's just sort of, we're going to let the camera linger on her and have her, like, make a face. But, like, I thought she was sort of luxuriating in that performance in a way that I really liked, and sort of living in her body and the way that, like, she was able to have the effect that she has on all these characters and how much she's aware of that and okay with it and not okay with it. And even with the way that her character does take a sort of a hard right turn in terms of her, she all of a sudden it's just like, oh, now you're going to sort of play this kind of role, you're going to play this kind of emotion, you're going to be, you know, more overwhelmed than we were expecting from you. But I think she pulls that off.
What did you guys
think? Now it's my turn to draw the silence.
No, I think luxuriating is a great word for why I liked it. I realize it's sort of like a trifle on some levels. It feels more like a art house vacation than one for the film, one for the resume, you know. Like a showpiece. But I like that about all the actors, that they all just seem so comfortable in their skin, so that made the sort of weird frictions between the characters more interesting to me, because in some ways they were all like extremely, extremely like relaxed and uninhibited, and in other ways they were like really rubbing each other the wrong way, which I thought was an interesting dynamic. Most of all, I just thought it was super sexy. And there's not enough movies that try to do sexy. There really isn't. There really aren't enough movies that think that's important.
Yeah.
Yep, I agree.
Did you dig the... There's a genre switch and a kind of new group of characters toward the end of the movie. And were you into that?
I liked it mostly because I liked the note that it ended on.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Like, the rug pulling was interesting, but I didn't necessarily need it.
I feel like the rug pulling was one thing, but then the reaction to the rug pulling and the way that it leaves Tilda and Matthias's characters, I liked.
Okay.
I liked that it was unflattering to to them, to put it bluntly. Yeah. Like, the sort of, like, unexpected, like, socioeconomic and,
Yes.
Like, I don't, like, what's the term for, like, colonialism or whatever? Where kind of like what that movie, that Dominican movie with, Geraldine Chaplin.
Oh, Sand Dollars, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit like that, like the sort of, like, the exploitation of countries and peoples by, like, wealthy intruders type of thing.
Uh-huh.
I liked that it had elements of that, even though that wasn't at all, like, its main focus.
Mm-hmm.
I liked that it was doing a side eye.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't just in love with the characters. But yeah, it's not a perfect movie or anything, but I just super enjoyed watching it.
I don't want to talk you down from your high, though. Like, I'm mellowing everybody, but...
No, I already felt that way. I knew it wasn't super... Like, it's not going to make my top 10 list or anything, but...
Was it a jarring genre switch for you, Nick?
I mean, I think I liked the things about it that you guys have said you liked about it, too. And I wasn't... I did like the kind of amorality of the last couple minutes.
Yeah.
The movie had already started to feel long to me at that point, so it was a little bit of, like, shifting in my seat that I realized we now had, like, 20 more minutes and not five. And I did think that the critique of their privilege and their presence in the world where they were was more interesting and kind of successful to me than the attempt to actually gesture to refugee populations, which felt really clumsy and almost a version of what I thought the movie was critiquing. So
felt very almost randomly, haphazardly applied.
Yes. And I was actually, I think I was gearing up at a certain point for the Mikhail Haneke version of events where there are people who haven't come back, who other people are waiting for.
Right.
And that crime would actually be pinned on these migrants of color who we've suddenly seen.
I thought you were going to mention, like, that the housekeeper would just be like, guess who saw all of this?
Mm. Oh, I hadn't even thought of that. No, she had, like, one morning I'm going to have to wake my mistress up and be really sad written on her body from the second we met her. So I'd filed her away, but... But when it got later and later, I was like, ooh, what if some folks actually really aren't returning tonight? And will that be tied back to that awkward sort of encounter that they all just had? And I don't know that I would have liked that movie better, but it would have felt like it wasn't sort of pulling a punch. And I don't know. Like I can see making that movie, maybe being in the middle of making that movie and being like, you guys, we can't not acknowledge this thing that's happening right now.
Right.
But it ended up in a really strange place, I thought.
I see now that at Venice last year, it won the award for Best Innovative Budget, which is an interesting euphemism, and I have no idea what it means.
But is that like gowns, beautiful gowns?
Like, you're doing new things with budgets. Like, I'm not quite sure what that means.
Plus, Venice is the, like, you know, 5,000 prizes. Like, I might have won a prize at Venice last year. I'm not totally sure.
Oh my god, you guys, I have to go, but thank you so much for chatting about these movies. Tell us what you thought of Tell us what you thought of Sing Street, A Bigger Splash, which we're very divided on, apparently. And The Lobster. We want to... Do your tastes align with ours, or do you think we're all crazy?
We're all crazy, but
well,
also...
that's true. And which animal would you want to be?
Oh, God. I've been wrestling with that.
So, thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
What animal?
Oh, what animal? It would have to be something that either flies or lives in the sea, because, like, that's at least, like, then they get extra. So, I guess a bird of some sort.
You get extra?
Yeah, because, like, I can't fly or breathe underwater now, so I'd be able to, like, do something that I couldn't do before.
Yeah.
But I'm going to have to, like, die for being single. I'm at least going to get something out of it.
Nick, thank you.
I hope an option is to just be Winnie the Pooh, which is all I want to be anyway. Like, I might opt for that now, if it were an option.
I think I would. I was gonna say raccoon, just because they always thought they were cool, but now Joe has convinced me that I should be a dolphin.
Yeah, that just seems fun.
They seem happy and swimming. I love to swim.
Don't see the cove.
I have seen the cove, unfortunately.
Well, try to unsee it.
All right. Thanks for tuning in.